This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to this Friday's Writers' House. Hope you're all safe and well. Today we are going to talk about Paul Pogba's 4-year suspension, then look ahead to the WSL North London Derby at the Emirates and the Manchester City and Man United game. What am I saying that for? The Derby. And my guests are Flo Lloyd Hughes and Fadumo Olo. How are you, ladies?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm really cool. Look at me.
You look cool.
Flo, why are you laughing? Am I anxious? Have I got an anxious vibe?
No, just because you say look at me and this is an audio medium.
Because I'm asking you to.
I'm asking you to look
at me. Like, you can see me. I'm telling
you.
Yeah? I feel good. I've got a vibe, you know? Feeling good today.
Yeah. Why are you feeling good? Tell us. Take us inside. Come on.
Oh, yes.
It's a big day.
Yeah, it's a big day. Uncle Righty, the food side of my enterprise. And we're launching that today. We're launching it with a chicken and sage and onion pie with my dear friends Willie's Pies. But the thing of it is that this is maybe why you can feel a vibe, right? Because I'm quite nervous about it because it's a venture into something that's so different, but something that I've got a lot of passion for, which is like food and the camaraderie that comes with it and the friendship and some of your best moments and times is when you're eating food. So I wanted to get back into that, especially when we was younger. We didn't do a lot of eating together as like family. So the more I've done that and the more you're eating good food, you know what I mean? I like that vibe. I like the energy of food bringing people together. So we're doing that today. We're doing it down in, Brixton. So I got to thank Brian from Fish Wings and Tings for letting us use his restaurant in Brixton. But it all came about really, it's probably Lotton Wubbamoy.
Wow.
Because Lotta,
she's the brains behind the operation.
I need you to connect those dots for me.
Where's the commission for Lotta?
Yeah. Well, let's see where it goes first. But
she's going to be claiming that.
Because what happened was is that during lockdown, and just before lockdown, Lotta introduced us to Willie and Josh, the guys who run Willie's Pies. Mm. And they were trying to get a pie to me so as I could taste it and this and that. And so they linked Lotta linked, and I ate the pie and I went, wow. And then, you know what I mean? I said, yeah, I want to meet them. You know, I want to meet the guys and that. And when I met them, and it's literally through lockdown that they got themselves going. You know what I mean? I think he lost his job or something. And then he started to make the pies and just deliver them all through COVID. And it really hit off and kicked off. And then they started their Willie's Pies. And like I say, when I went to see them and they told me the story of how they done it and everything, I said, you know something, I really wouldn't mind, you know, investing in you guys, because the passion and the love and the drive, and when people taste the pies, I'm not just saying that they are amazing.
I have had a pie. I can confirm they're great pies.
Right, so that's where that all started, and Lotta gave us that introduction, and then now obviously I'm starting with the Uncle Righty's food, and we're starting with a roast, right? You know, so a chicken, sage, and onion pie, and like I say, we're gonna go and do it in Brixton today. Did you see the energy? Was there a nervous energy about me? Was there?
No, I think it's an exciting sort of nervous, you know, bit start of something big. And I think the overall vibe of not just the pie, but the new venture is like, it's like a nice warm big hug.
It feels like I'm just really excited about it because all the people, you know, all the people that are involved, you know, Alex and Kaz, obviously, Roscoe and Will and Josh and everybody that's been involved in what we're doing, Marie and that, you know, there's so much work that's gone into it. And then you just start to feel, oh my gosh, this is really happening. Because it didn't, we just started saying, you know, let's do something. Let's do Uncle Writers. And then obviously we're using the Uncle Writers. It's another term of endearment. People call me that. So we launched it off of that. But like, it's just to do something else and do something that like brings the people in.
And it's food, so much of our culture is about food anyway, bringing people together. So I think it's sick.
Exactly.
I'm trying to bring you over to the Smiley side. So
I'm going to come.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry. I'll sort
you out. Don't worry.
I can't wait for the content.
Yes.
It's going to be amazing.
So Flo, what's happening? Can I just say, moving on to football.
Oh no.
Paul Pogba.
It's a sad day.
Yeah. I thought you were coming for me then, the way you said that, Flo.
No.
Can I just say, I was like, oh no, here we go.
You know, obviously for doing a bit Man United fan here, you know, I'm sure how excited she was when it was starting to happen in respect of Pogba going and everything. But like, I was. Obviously we saw the launch and everything that happened with that. And, you know, him leaving when he's younger and coming back after doing brilliantly at Juventus, you know, doing all these stuff. And for it to pan out how it has for him now, for one of the players that I feel is so synonymous with how the culture is and how youth are and how people are, he enjoys everything. He's expressive. You know what I mean? He's a fantastic footballer. You know, everything about somebody you want to look at and think, wow, man, so cool. He's so cool and this and that. And the one thing you wanted to happen for him was on the pitch so as he can try and prove a lot of people wrong in respect of how they felt about him. And obviously there's going to be a lot of people who will be saying, yeah, see, we told you it's always going to end up like this for him. But it feels to me like a real, real tragedy of a story, the way it's panned out.
I think
for
so.
Yeah, definitely. I think with Paul Pogba, like he is, like you say, synonymous with so many things around culture, around even like when he was announced at Manchester United, it was through like a music video type of vibe.
With Stormzy.
I mean? I know. And that's so different and unexpected. And I think sometimes those differences is what kind of rub people up the wrong way.
Yes, yeah.
But ultimately, like, I don't think you can ever deny what type of footballer he was. And it is. It's just sad, like, that's your World Cup winner, like, you know, one of the best in the world. Like, that's not how
you're going to be remembered.
Should be remembered. That should be your legacy, especially with how much, you know, he's done. And I think ultimately, I think Paul Pogba is a massive part of, like, the shift of understanding of football. It's like, you know, footballers, I think, for a very long time were seen as, like, robotic. Mm-hmm. You go on, you do your job, you train, you play. You're asked post-match about how that felt and you go on and that's it. But I think incorporating stuff around your culture, music, food, things that you like, it's so different and sometimes taken in the wrong way. And I think Paul Pogba was a massive, you know, start or beginning as to why that was happening a lot. And he was a massive force behind it. So I think ultimately, like, it's sad. I know that he was very divisive in the United fan base, but it didn't work out the way he wanted it to work out. But I think one thing about Paul Pogba is it's everyone you can tell from a professional level that's spoken about him can't deny the amount of talent that man has. So whether it worked out, you know, United, Juventus, whatever it's just a sad circumstance.
It's a very sad
and you don't want it to be your legacy. But I know, I think he's appealing at the minute. So
yeah, there will be an appeal process because he's been given a 4-year ban.
Yeah.
And the way that anti-doping works in football feels... it does feel harsh because it's sort of marked at a standard that is, you know, the global sport is marked to. And a lot of that is Olympic Games. And you can understand for a lot of Olympic sports why bans are treated in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But with footballers having a 4-year ban,
it's done.
It feels extreme and it feels a lot. I'm not saying it means what he did was okay.
Yeah.
But I do think in footballing context, that does seem quite extreme when you especially look at the sort of bans and suspensions we see for other situations in football. It feels particularly harsh.
The calendar year for football, it's so intense. So the amount of, like, I guess, competition you miss in those 4 years.
It just feels like a retirement is just thrown upon you, especially at his age.
Whereas I guess if you're not, it's not comparable, but I guess if you were someone that was barred from like an Olympic 4 years, you've missed one Olympic cycle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Compared to missing like an insane amount of competitions across various leagues, international as well. So, and also, like, he's 30 years old, so comes back at 34 with no club.
It just feels like the only option will be, you know,
retirement at that point.
Going to Saudi or MLS or a softer league where you can maybe still be a big star and earn a bit.
Yeah.
But in terms of his peak, or he's maybe even past his peak anyway, but in terms of these last few years, which it hasn't been a good time for him back at Juventus. Yeah. So it just feels sad because, like you say, Ian, I just feel like it's such a sliding doors of the kind of career and legacy that who was seen as a generational player, his career's just tailed off into a bit of a tragic potential end. Mm. And there are so many players that we've kind of looked at maybe through the years. Freddie Adu, for example, who was this generational young American player. And there's an amazing audio doc that Grant Wall did about him a few years ago that kind of looked at his rise up and the way he was treated at just 15 and what happened to him. Now, Pogba has had more longevity than that.
Yeah.
But in terms of obviously how elite he was and where his career has gone and the expectation, and the fact is the World Cup win was huge and will go down as his career highlight. But I think a lot of people would say he never quite matched his potential elsewhere. And there has been so many injury issues and off-field issues that have surrounded kind of every bit of his career. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, even at Juventus, most recently, he hasn't played nearly as much as you'd hope for someone that is that talented or, you know, is expected to be so good at what he does. So, yeah, it is ultimately quite unfortunate that this is his story, but I guess it's a working story at the minute. He is appealing it, so it might change, it might not change, we'll see. But at the moment, it's not kind of the legacy you want as a professional footballer.
He has injuries at Juventus as well, isn't it? It's like he can't.
And he had them towards the end at Manchester United as well. Just so many injury issues.
I liked him at United, I'm not going to lie to you. I liked him.
You know the thing with him?
Despite the fact that he was divisive between people, I thought he was sick.
Yeah, but like it's the same with me. There was never a game what he was involved in that I wasn't excited about how it was going to work out for him.
I think he still had that aura. Yeah. He still has that aura now because he's a big name.
He's one of those players. He's one of the players I remember saying, I think I said to Wright about that, you know, if you can watch. Remember they used to have player camp? And you could just watch one player. I remember going to games and just watching someone like Pogba. Watched Mesut Ozil was another one.
Yeah.
Beautiful to just, when you're watching, just watch him on the pitch. All the time. Even if you go to a game and you just say, I'm just watching him for just 10 minutes.
In isolation.
Yeah. So you know, everything's going on, but you're just constantly watching his movements and that. Done it with Pogba. Amazing. Amazing the way he'll be out of it, he'll come into it, just one touch play, he'll get on it, he'll run through. And you just keep watching him, looking at those players, looking around. Same with Ozil. Brilliant to watch live. And that's the beauty of Pogba, how beautiful he was when he played as well. Like, Ozil, beautiful, obviously Zidane, you could go through so many. But Pogba was one of those players that I disappointed in a lot of the games he played in. I thought after the World Cup, that was it. This is the Pogba we're going to see on a weekly basis, and we're fortunate to have him in the Premier League. But it didn't work out like that. But like to live up to that potential is...
And I just think
it was obviously too much for
Manchester
him in the
end. United is just that environment where it'll just chew you up and spit you out, no matter how sort of beloved and how high your potential. I mean, think about what happened to Sancho. He arrived with so much promise, so much excitement. He was, you know, they chased him for so long. And it didn't work out. And I think, you know, there was this whole romantic idea that maybe Zaha would come back. He had a similar situation to maybe Pogba in the way that he left as a youngster. And then it's like, okay, I don't know. I think it doesn't help. Maybe Manchester United is a sort of club where that environment and that culture, if there is a potential for things to go wrong, they go wrong in such dramatic.
I feel like you need thick skin to be in that place.
Oh, 100%. 100%. It feels like it's rarely the club that someone maybe comes and, you know, wraps their arms around you and supports you and saves you, which is, it's a harsh environment, and football is a harsh environment. But Manchester United especially just feel like they...
We can see it with Marcus Rashford.
Yeah.
You know, another one, you know, you have to really worry about, he's had to come out and talk and, you know, try to put the record straight about what's going on with him. But that's maybe for another day. But like,
what was your biggest sliding doors moment? I feel like you've had a few.
No,
so. just one.
No. Easily the biggest sliding doors moment would have been the trial. Let me see. Would it be the trial?
I would have thought you would have said that, but I wonder if there was maybe one more of a move in your career rather than just getting that break. You know?
What do you mean? Like the move to Arsenal or something?
No, no, just in that sort of middle bit of your career after Arsenal, that sort of like where to next? Or
no, the I tell you what I'd probably say the best ending I could is the Burnley. My time at Burnley with my old coach who really got me going in the first place at Palace. He saw that I was raw. You know what I mean? He used to take me after training and teach me how to be a striker, give me videos and everything. I think I could have gone to Millwall. The chairman wanted me to come there. I think it was, the guy was their manager for a little, the guy was their manager and Mooney or someone up front. I can't remember who was up front. Sorry, it's not important. But he said, listen, if you come, you might have
to. Neil Harris, no.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, it was Neil Harris.
Neil Harris
okay.
And Mooney was up front. And they were doing really well. And he said, yeah, we'd love you to come in that, but obviously you're going to have to. But then once Stan phoned me and told me about Burnley, what they wanted to do and trying, that was a big moment for me because obviously watching Millwall when I was really young, you know, at some stage I thought, yeah, I'll probably play for Millwall if I get the chance. And that moment was when I said, no, I'm going to go with Stan, the way he helped me at the start and he wants help now. So I wouldn't say it's a sliding door moment, but it was a decision where I thought to myself, because at the time television wanted me to come out anyway. They wanted me to come out and do that show I was doing and carry on. But like I thought, no, I'm going to do this. And I'm quite pleased I've done that because Burnley got promotion and it ended really well. You know, but like only sliding doors moment would have been when I had the trial for Palace. Probably the first team game what I played against the first time. And I scored a couple of goals. And when Steve Coppell took me off, because they were kicking me, man. They really were. They were trying to kick me. They were kicking me hard as well. And I thought that he took me off because I'd done stuff that weren't right and I was scored. Yeah. But then he took me off, but he didn't say anything. But really, he's taking me off to protect me. And that was the moment where I thought, I think I've done it. Mm. I think I'm in. You know what I mean? Because everybody's coming up to you and saying, oh, well done, this and that. And so this was during the 2-week trial. And so that was the kind of moment where I think I'm in. Right, I've got to really focus now. But then when they only signed me for 3 months, I thought, I'm still not in. You know, but then it started to work out. But like, I've gone a long way around trying to explain whether it's a sliding doors moment or not. But in my head, I realized that something's got to change for you now. You either got to go to a place where you're going to work hard to get to this place so as you can make sure that Steve Coppell does take you. And even after the 3 months, I said, I had to do it again. Keep going, you know. Those moments were the most frightening moments for me. When I was at that stage of my career, because I didn't want to go back to the community and say I didn't make it again, you know. So I was really worried in that period. That was like the first 4 or 5 months of my at Palace. That was the time where I didn't know what I was going. Do I need to look for a job? Do I need to carry on working like this? Can I carry on doing this if they're going to? Because it's 3 months. 3 months. I'm thinking, when are they going to? What am I going to do? You know, Sean Bradley was born. You know, 2 kids. So it was just really a case of, I'm going to get rejected again, or do you try and go for this? And somewhere along, I went for it. I don't know.
Do you think, like, in some way, you know, when we spoke about Paul Pogba earlier on, the World Cup being such an outstanding moment for him, and then coming back and having the pressure, like, so that was probably the peak of his potential.
Yeah.
And coming back to a club and knowing what your current performance is and kind of almost like seeing your potential but not being able to quite reach it.
Yes.
Is that like a feeling that you've ever had?
No.
You always do this when it's like a question about an experience. You're always like, I was too elite.
Yeah,
no.
can't relate
because
can't
you relate. Know why?
Couldn't be me.
Couldn't be.
You know
don't,
the reason
don't
why?
Know the man. Never
I,
heard yeah. of him.
I didn't feel like I had any choice but to have that
yeah,
mindset.
I feel like because yeah. for you, like yeah. it was either make it or go and find a job.
That's exactly
it. Make
what
it or
it was.
Break it.
Yeah, it was
exactly.
yeah because so I didn't have that because I wasn't thinking negative. I could only think of having to do it. It's like, I tell you, who I spoke to was in this, who had the same kind of story as knowing I have to do this, was Callum Wilson.
Yeah.
Callum Wilson's story is amazing. You know, when you listen to his story, it's brilliant. And he had the same situation in his mind where it could have gone wrong for him, but in his mind, he was not thinking of anything other than making it. And once I got to that stage, that's how I was. I wasn't thinking of, you know, once things happen and then you come back. No, it's like when I went to England and came back. I thought, I've got to go again.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's different as well. I think it's different for so many of the kids who, like Pogba and others, who are academy, highly rated prospect kids compared to people like yourself who go from a more grassroots, or like Jamie Vardy,
yes.
for example, very
yes.
similar, you know, going through, or Les Ferdinand, who was plucked from
Stuart
Hayes.
Pearce.
Like that, I think it's a very different journey. I think academy kids have this weird experience because they are at such a highly rated
and
elite
they're so
club,
good, yeah.
And they're so good at a young age that the idea of not making it is so alien and therefore it hits so much harder and you've got so much more stake. Whereas for other people who are coming from a grassroots, more traditional grassroots one, it's like any opportunity, you are going to grab it with both hands.
Because you know what life is like out here.
Exactly, this could be it.
Yeah.
And I just
you kind of experience life on the outside, whereas academy is like you've been in that bubble and you don't see anything outside.
You know something, there's something to be said about experiencing something like, because I don't think I would have changed my entry into football now. I know there's a lot of rejection and stuff, but when you listen to the academy stories and the players, and even players that I, you know, when I was at school with who were in the district and going for England trials and that, they never even met. By the time they were 18, 19, they were out of the game. So, you know what I mean? You're just thinking, wow, it would have been so tough to be in there. You know, we've got even players, I remember when I was younger, they used to talk about Lillishaw, that the best of the best used to go to Lillishaw. And like, when you think, a couple of them might come out of there. You know what I mean? It's so tough. And then what do they do? Because we're talking about players who've got to the level of England, and then all of a sudden, by the time they're 17, they go for a trial here, and then they're out of the game. I don't know how they deal with that. So some of those guys, I don't know how they've dealt with it. And that's the story that people should hear. This is why I always thought people should be working on the building site some of the times. Of course, you might get injured. You should let some of the players work on the building site for a week, knowing. So I'll go back to football on Monday. But you get a boss who's going to work you there because, like you said, I do not want to do this kind of work when I can play. No. I can do that.
I was going to say, it's not like you loved working on the building site.
No, but the thing is, I knew how hard it was. I knew what hard days
that
were.
That put you off for life.
Yeah, you know, it made you real, because sometimes I was on the site. I remember I had to work with a guy called Mr. Burke and Deli, who was his name was Deli as well. He used to be the plasterer, and I used to have to make the cement for him and make the cement for him and bring it up and do all that stuff. Sometimes
but were you bad at it? Because I've heard that you're really bad at DIY.
When I tried to do the plastering, you know what I mean? I thought, I'm probably going to be a labourer for the rest of my life.
Wow.
I wasn't very good.
I was going to say, you weren't good at it.
I weren't great, but I tried. I really tried. But the work, bringing cement for two builders who are going all day. And so you're making it up, bringing it up for him. Then he needs more. Then he needs more. And sometimes a guy, especially Mr. Burke, would say, this ain't good enough. Then you have to bring it back and do it again. And you're doing that all day. Some of the times when I was doing like that hard work in training, I said, this isn't even hard. You know, when they're saying you got run up that hill and this and do that, I said, is this my hard work? Because I know what hard work's like. You know, when you're doing, I'm sitting down, my back's hurting me. And then they say, right, we've got to go again.
You're like, is this all you've got? Come on, try and kill me. Try and kill me.
The thing is that the hard work in football is on yourself for you to be better. You know, that was just hard work. It was destroying me. I was I'm a lazy person in the main anyway.
I'm trying to get to that because I know that is your idea of hell.
Lazy. Honestly.
At this point, right, I feel like you need to go in, get those boys pre-season tour, get them on a build-a-side. Then you'll win the league by sure, definitely.
Hopefully. That's the true pre-season experience.
Back to Pogba, it's just that you're just wondering. I thought that after the World Cup, if you've won the World Cup, you probably got to be more relaxed in yourself, in your achievement.
Oh yeah, you've got to have be the peak of self-confidence at that point.
Right. So you're thinking, apart from injuries and stuff like that, you can go out onto the pitch and just be, because everything now is a bonus. You've won the greatest thing you can win in football. So like you look at it and you think to yourself, this surely should be the time where he's gone to that place where I'm here, I'm arrived. And I can't say I've seen three or four, apart from the World Cup performances, three or four, let's say five on the spin of just consistent brilliance.
Yeah.
Didn't see it. You know, and that's what would be thrown at him at every situation when people are talking about the football. He wasn't consistent enough. And people say, yeah, the World Cup is easy because it's only eight games, probably. It's eight games, you know, so. Well, hey, you know, I just hope that somewhere along the line he can find it in himself to be at peace with himself, because I don't know how I would deal with that.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would have dealt with that, but good luck to him.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
So Flo, yeah. North London Derby.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it. I'm not sure about our form going in with a couple of people, but like I hope that a couple of players, I hope Lea Vorti's playing for a start. Fingers crossed. I'm hearing Kadena might be playing. What are you laughing at?
Your face was basically the upside down emoji. I've never seen a smile bend so much at my life.
No, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm going. Looking forward to it. I feel that Tottenham can cause us problems.
Yeah.
The thing is, right, and we were talking about this on Counter Press yesterday. Mm-hmm. That Tottenham result at the back end of last year at Spurs Stadium. It was a massive result for Spurs. They'd never beaten Arsenal before. But Arsenal didn't play amazing in that game, but they had a hell of a lot of chances. I don't see a way that Spurs, personally, can sit back and do the same thing again away at the Emirates, where they have a really bad record, have conceded a load of goals. I just feel like Arsenal won't get done twice like that. And I feel like they will have a point to prove at home, especially after the confidence build of that Manchester United game. Manchester United was poor in that game.
Poor.
Oh my but
God. I love how you're smiling right now.
it was a serious low point for them. But I just think
it's a low point for me.
Off the back of that, I just don't think Arsenal will let what happened at Spurs Stadium happen again. I just don't see it, but you know, Arsenal's so unpredictable and so inconsistent this season.
I mean, I guess West Ham.
You don't know. Exactly. Yeah. But it's all about the chances. If they can't, the problem is Arsenal guaranteed to create something.
Yep.
But putting those chances away is critical at the moment. And I think when you also have some defensive issues with injuries, Lotta Wubemoyi's been elite this season. Yep. She's been their most consistent player. She's been unreal. And then she's followed that up with good international break form. But the fact that they haven't necessarily been able to play because of injuries or now Gold Cup with Fox and Lacazette obviously go, but that back line hasn't been able to really be consistent for much of the season, throwing Kadena in, goalkeeper issues, that imbalance, I think then you put even more pressure on the forward line to deliver. Mm. And I think Beth Mead, she is someone who tries to take every chance that comes her way, but it's not always coming off.
Yeah. Right.
And I think, you know, there's more that forward line needs to get to just ease the pressure as well. Because if they get themselves some early goals on Sunday, I think it could be, you know, 3-0. It could be a big scoreline.
But I do think, like, in the sense, because you were talking about the defensive issues they've got and the goalkeeper issues, I feel like in some way it could work in Spurs' favour. Because Martha Thomas has been outstanding for Spurs so far since she's joined. Beth England, not so much, but she's also Beth England, so you never know.
Beth England against Lotta. But Lotta's done well against all the forwards this season.
Yeah,
she's got everyone in her pocket. Mm.
You are the tissue for Lotta to start for England.
Always. Always. But I think also, it, since that result as well against Arsenal for Spurs, well, since the start of the year, they've been a little bit wobbly as well. Yeah. So I think that could play into Arsenal's hands because they've signed some new players, yet to gel, had some injuries, had some players that left in January. So this second half of the season has been a little bit unsettling for them. And I know their fans have been a bit disappointed with their recent performances. So it's either like the narrative is either, oh, well, that's, you know, something's got to come together soon for Spurs after the last few weeks. Or it's Arsenal are going to make them pay for what happened in the return fixture. But I feel like my chips are going on the Arsenal make them pay narrative rather than the Spurs can do that again narrative. But you never know. You look very concerned.
Yeah, I'm worried about our goals. I want Leslie to get it going for herself. You know what I mean? We need to.
She's still been involved in a lot of goals. Mm, yeah. I know.
I'd play her and Steena. I would.
I the pressure is there because she is Lionesses FC and she's a big name.
Yeah.
And she's on a big contract. And, you know, people are really excited that she's there. But I see it falling into place. I think she still had a lot of goal involvements this season in all competitions. Maybe not as many goals in the WSL as people would have liked. I think Stina brings that pace, which, you know, obviously Russo maybe doesn't have quite as much of. But I still think they've got enough to work with.
Yeah,
it's just
definitely.
Take those chances. So many games they've had double-digit shots.
But I just want her to not be so intent on the build-up. Be that player says, I'm staying in here.
Yeah.
You know, get me the ball in here.
She is a big part of the build-up to
we want goals
trying
off of her.
To get a goal. I feel like she should be doing a lot less assisting and a bit more being front.
Yes, yes. Let those players in there for
the ball
to get
you
on it,
you
know?
Because she's so good inside the box. When she gets in, it's more or less given that she'll score.
Yeah, I think maybe...
I think she's so involved in the build-up from that midfield all the way up. It's just... And then eventually she loses the ball and it just doesn't work out. But we saw her, you know, in, like you said, Lions FC. So
I just feel like what happened at the start of the season where Arsenal was so over-reliant on using Russo as a bit more of a target man and putting crosses and balls into the box. I feel like that spooked them a little bit and they've played better since not using Russo as a bit more of a like a sort of stale like target man nine just stuck in the box. I think they play better when she is part of the build-up play, but then you need someone who's going to make those runs in behind. So it's kind of a bit of a catch-22 for them. And with Miedemar maybe out, she had to leave the Netherlands camp, Pelova as well, who's been so good for Arsenal this season. I think it limits her options then of, you know, who might be a 10 opportunity to then give Russo the opportunity to like run in behind, whether that's going to be Kim Little pushing higher, whether that's going to be Frieda Marnham, who's not had the best season. I just feel like there aren't as many options to allow Russo to push forward.
Yeah.
And I feel like she has to almost drop back because she needs to be that link.
It's a shame. What about Cooney Cross? I want Cooney Cross in the team now. I really want her in the team. I know that in the City game not long ago, she kind of got a bit bypassed, but I think that she's the kind of player in these big games.
Big occasions.
Yeah. I think she does well in those. And I think she's somebody that not only can break stuff, but she can progress the ball for us and get the ball into Lessie. But saying that, I would like Lessie to just to get more goals. Because you're right, Flo, some of the times we're seeing too many chances missed. You know what I mean? And that is what you've got to take, especially at home now. You've got to do it early. You've got to finish them, like what we saw City do to Luton. You know, everybody's all let's see what's got. Bam, 3 minutes. Bam. Yeah. You know, put the marker down. This is what's going to happen. Put them under pressure and get shots on the goal. And, you know, we've got full house. We've got to really go for it. Really put them under pressure. And they got, like Grace Clinton's, obviously, she must be flying high at the moment. You know what I mean?
She's
right as well.
So good.
I love players like that. I mentioned it when we was doing the ITV show, that she's had to leave United and go on loan to Tottenham. And players who go on loan, you have to have a different mindset about what you're doing, because you've got to show people that you're good enough to get in that team, and not we're just coming here because you're not as good as that team and I can easily get in this team. You've got to show them that, wow, she's good. She should be in that team. You have to have a different mindset when you go on loan, and she's done that. You know, it's got her into the England squad. You know, she's somebody now that Man United are looking at. She's causing them a problem, because for me, Grace Clinton could easily be playing for Man United right now. So she's a bit of a worry. You know what I mean? In what she's going to do. Obviously, you can't, you know, Beth England. You know what I mean? I love watching Beth England play. The way she plays, the way she works the channels, the way she holds it up, and the way she'll take her opportunity to shoot. So we're going to have to be on it. And then, you know, we're going to have to make sure that, like Lotta, obviously, we know she's playing brilliantly. So, you know, we're just going to have to be on it, but start fast. We have to start fast, I think.
Speaking of derbies.
Oh.
For dooms. What we're going to say, because like, you know.
I feel like the way I'm holding my head.
You hope that Man United do have one of those performances where everybody's against them, because you think, well, the way they played, even Forest the other day with the Casemiro goal right at the death. You know, we saw what happened with them.
At Fulham.
Against Fulham at home. You know, and you're going into it again with Man City. You've just come off of putting six past Luton in the cup. You know, De Bruyne
and De Bruyne cannot
really
be a human combination.
Honestly,
shouldn't be legal.
It's a cheat code.
So unfair.
You know, so you think about this game, and you just at the Etihad, you do not give them you don't give United a chance. I remember I kind of went into that game. Remember when Pogba was speaking about him just now? That game, they didn't give Man United much of a chance, and then they ended up winning that one. But like this one, I cannot see how Man United are going to do it. When I looked at how they played against Fulham, I saw Jamie Carragher do a bit on it, and how open they are. And what I saw with Luton with City is that Luton were trying to get close, and we're talking about maybe a yard out, half a yard out for Duma, and they were punished. And this is what I'm saying against United at home. If they come there and they're not organised in whatever press they're doing it, whether it's the top end, a mid block or a low block, if they're not organising that, this could be a real beating.
But the reverse, yeah, exactly. But when they play that same fixture but at home at Old Trafford, I went to watch that and it was abysmal. Like, it was a hot mess. There was, again, like, no organisation amongst the squad. And you can just tell, like, it's just the nervousness around Old Trafford as a whole. Like, there's not that many City fans there, but they're loud. They're loud and proud. You can hear them. And I'm like, it's so such an unsettling environment. And I don't feel like it should be that. So if you've got that atmosphere at home and that's how your players are delivering at home, Lord knows how it's going to be away, man.
Yes. I don't know what they're going to do about the midfield. You know, obviously you want people like Kobbie Mainoo to be able to get on the ball in situations where he can progress it, and then you're obviously going to need Marcus on form, Fernandez on form.
Hoyland's probably still going to be out as
You know, which is a massive miss.
Massive
now.
Loss, yeah.
You know, especially, a massive miss.
Especially considering how he found his rhythm and got into form. Like, it's such a huge, unfortunate miss.
But, you know, my problem with Man United is always they have to try and control the game. And for a bit there, with Kobbie Mainoo coming in, with Fernandez pushed up, and that it felt, with Hoyland playing, it felt like, oh, you could see.
Yeah, but we've had this. I've honestly feel like I've said this about five times in the last 2 years on this podcast. Mm. The false starts that Manchester United have had, where you feel like this is it, it's finally clicking, they might win two games back to back, and then it all just collapses again.
Yeah.
That is the same thing. It's like when it comes together and they build these mini runs, and you see Mainoo and Hoyland coming into form and all this kind of stuff, and then just evaporates so quickly because there'll be an injury or there'll be a huge result like the Fulham defeat that just takes them
back.
Two steps back again. And I just feel like that also puts pressure on Ten Hag, and then the conversations around Ten Hag's future come up again. And it's like, how much longer can that continue before there's some kind of actual consistency that needs to materialize?
And especially this season, I feel like it's been very much, like you described it, a yo-yo season. Like, we'll do two or three games, you know, fly high, it's going so well, and then you have that one defeat from a team you really shouldn't be losing
especially to.
Then we're so back, it's so overgraph on Manchester United is ridiculous.
It literally is insane. So, and I think, like, you do want young talent to come through your academy and you want them to do well, but I feel like at what expense when you're at United?
Well, this is the thing for Luma. Ideally, you want to bring them in like Liverpool, bringing them in.
Yeah.
When the team's doing well, when there's a buzz around the place, you know, obviously the manager leaving, and that's gone to another level of intensity of how much the fans are behind the team. But when you're looking at Man United coming in as a youngster, or Man United coming in as even an experienced player, and you've been bought, the pressure was going on.
But I think what's impressive is some of them have matched up to it. I mean, Omari Forson was chucked in because of the Hoyland injury and actually didn't do too badly in that Fulham game until he came off.
No, he passed him by Flo.
Do you think? Yeah. I thought he was he came off quite early in the second half.
Yeah, but the thing
half,
is that I just felt like the reason why is because Fulham was so organised. You can obviously see that he can play, especially if he's playing in front of Mad Diallo. He's obviously got something. But what you saw was a very organised Fulham side that didn't give him really hardly any space to do anything. You could see his touch is good, his left foot's good, he looks like he's pretty sharp. But for me, that game, I probably would have started Diallo because he's got a little bit more experience about playing in front of the crowd. He was player of the season in the Championship last season. So you're thinking, how comes he started in front of him in a game that they really needed to do something in? I would have started him, and then I would have probably brought Forson on simply because even when you saw him coming off, he was so forlorn. It was like, I couldn't get going. And like, people's impression of him now is, he got a chance, he just passed him by. It's so unfortunate for them to have to come into a game where, you know, you, you can't get on the ball properly. You know, yes, he's got ability in that, but you do need the experience of the team and the team playing to a certain manner where you can actually get on it and do something. Because I didn't see him
do anything. They would have thought Fulham was going to be that game because they have a very strong record against Fulham at Old Trafford, and they probably would have thought, even without Hoyland, there was enough there.
I would have still started Jallo instead of him just to bring him on so he can have a feel of it. But then you look how the game materialised, how it fit, how it ended up. He probably wouldn't have been any stage in that game where they would have let up Fulham. So it would have been a tough game for him. That's why, unfortunately, he got taken off.
And I feel for Manchester United fans because then the narrative this whole week has been so defensive off the back of that result. I just feel like, the conversation is just so sort of, it's like they know a big defeat is inevitably around the corner.
I think with United, there's so many moving parts to it. And I think that's partly the problem. You talk about Ten Hag's and his criticism, and people, talk about his future, whether he's going to stay beyond the end of the season. Talk about Marcus Rashford and how he's getting on, his interviews and stuff like that. And there's just so many different moving parts. It's almost like, what are you mad at, and what is the problem at this point? Because right now, it feels like everything is a problem.
And as a United fan, I don't know what's your state of mind right now. What are you thinking? You know what I mean?
Lord, just get us at the end of the season. You know what I mean? Honestly,
that's
some
the thing. You know,
well, I guess they've managed to, because this Premier League season is a bit of a mid-off on so many levels, they've managed to rescue a chance of trying to get
fourth.
Europe. Yeah. And I think that is something to fight for when they were sort of out of contention a couple of months ago. So I think that is good enough. But then I still feel like Manchester United fans are just now desperate for the summer and what they expect to be this like heroic new regen that will change their circumstances. But I just don't see how quickly that can happen.
Yeah.
The problem I have now with United is that, yes, Sir Jim Ratcliffe's coming in and he's going to change stuff. He's talking about doing the stadium, which obviously is great news for Man United fans. But at the same time, what are they going to do about the fact that the manager's been there, 19 months nearly now, 20 months, I don't know what it is. And we don't know what's happening with the team. We don't know what Man United's pattern of play is going to be. We don't know what's going on. We've seen no improvement from any players. You have to worry for him. You have to worry for him because you look at Iriola, you look at De Zerbi, you look at Unai Emery with the teams and the way they've turned those teams around. We know how they're going to play. I still feel like Ten Hag, up to this point, I'm not sure if he still knows how his team wants to play. And this is why I couldn't understand why he had a go at Jamie Carragher about the dissecting.
But that's the thing,
it.
It's that consistent defensiveness around criticism that just, you can see that pressure building up.
Yeah, because he's kind of like responding to Jamie. And it's, when you look at what it was, I don't know what match of the day.
Yeah.
It's the fans can see that.
Exactly, it's basic.
It's basic, That's not, that wasn't the argument to pick. That wasn't the one to jump in on. And I still, and now I feel that this is a time where this guy's back's to the wall now. He's, like you say, he's just, everything's defensive and me. It just feels very, like the leader. If that's my leader, I'm not sure what I'm looking at right now. So I don't know what Sir Jim Ratcliffe's going to do about that, because I don't know if he, in the summer, what they're going to do. Is he still going to be there? Ain't he going to be there? So it's an interesting one, because we're talking about Manchester United here, going to play their main rivals. Because Manchester United are not even noisy neighbours to Man City. They're perfect neighbours. They're like, they don't cause you any problems. They're the perfect neighbours.
But the thing is, even you as a Manchester United fan, Fumo, must look at this fixture. And I feel like we would all agree that we expect it to be a pretty comfortable City win.
Yeah. And
that's mad to think about going in anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you hope they can prove them wrong. Go on, sorry for doing.
Yeah, no, I hope so. I really hope so. No, but I feel like definitely in the sense that you'd imagine it to be a very comfortable City win. But also I think United have almost in more recent months than anything or have lost that, competition when it comes to these derbies or those big fixtures, the big Arsenal games, the Liverpool game, the Spurs games. Like, it's just not quite what it once used to be. And I feel like we're now losing the realm on the City
Wow.
kind of thing a little
bit
as
that's
well.
A big, yeah. That's big.
I know, but...
You know something? We're saying all this because we're setting it up off of the back of what we've seen in recent weeks and how they've been playing. But, you know, football, you know, you can't.
It works in mysterious ways.
Maybe this is similar to talking about the goalkeepers.
Maybe we can manifest a win for United.
Please.
We'll talk about it next week. But, like, I'm going to try and do a lot of manifesting, but, like, obviously I'm using a lot of it on the Arsenal game.
If you could share some, I might give a bit.
But like, well, you want Manchester United to get a result because it'll help Arsenal in the
Well, you
power
do.
Race.
Yeah. But at the same time, just for the United fans to see something, I don't want them to get hammered in this game. Mm. I don't want them to get hammered because you see what's happening with Fulham. If they get hammered in this game, I just feel like it's really gonna tip over the edge.
Yeah, you might not hear from me in the group chat come Sunday.
So you know what?
Depending on how bad this is.
There's a lot riding on this game for that manager. Let's just say that. But still, okay, ladies, I'm gonna have to say goodbye. So thank you very much, Flo Lloyd Hughes. Thank you very much for Duma Alo. That was really good. I really
very
enjoyed
good.
That. We had a good chat. I love being with the crash. I'll see you again soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
You going to the game on Sunday?
I am.
You going?
Babysitting.
Okay. Well, all the rest is babysitting, and I'll see you at the game.
See you at the game.
Okay. Take it easy. We'll see everybody next week. Take it easy, everyone.